A caller says, another scam I see coming through regularly. eFlow, you've been recorded using the motorway and so on and so forth. Excuse me, please. Yeah, another scam. Get that one all the time. That being said, I did... Well, it doesn't have to come in text. I did get a letter once stating that I had used a road which I hadn't used. And it comes by way of a letter with a photo. And I had to go, I think I had to go into the Garda station. I did have to go into the Garda station and declare that I wasn't on the road. Someone had duplicated my plates or something. Hi, Greg. Could you please say congratulations to Carrick Brack, British Frisians, John Allen Convoy, for winning first and second in the best Frisian heifer category at the National IHFA Awards in Portlaoise last Friday. Congratulations to you, John. Morning, Greg. Vinny here. I am a DPD driver and I get scam messages about my undelivered parcels from DPD. Just to let your listeners know, you will only get a text from us to tell you the time we'll be delivering your parcels and the name of your driver. Never click on any links ever. So that's Vinny. Who some of you might know. He's a podcaster as well and a DPD driver. He gets messages about undelivered parcels. All right, strange one. Okay, we want to make sure that we stay on top of one of the big issues of the last month, and that was a threat to the future of counselling services at the Rafo Dyson Pastoral Centre. You'd be familiar, hopefully, at this point with this story. They provide the only child and adolescent counselling services in this county. It's pretty much unprecedented across the country. They've engaged with many, many people and continue to do so. They've got a team of almost 30 counsellors, and it was suggested previously that they were on the brink of closure because the current director is stepping away. A new director needs to be appointed. Because of the scale of the operation, that director would need to be full time because there's a lot of hoops to jump through in terms of governance and what have you. So in the first instance, it's estimated that to keep these services going would cost around about €60,000. But of course, there's more to it than that. And there's other boxes that perhaps might need to be ticked. And there needs to be an overall conversation about the future of this service to make sure it's never lost. And it may require a little bit more money than that. So we wanted to bring you an update as to where we are at. So we have Liam Cannon, the Director of Counselling at the Rafo Dyson Pastoral Centre, with us on the programme. Liam, thank you very much for rejoining us again.
Yeah, good morning, Greg.
Right, so in terms of publicity, there's not an awful lot more you can do. This has been talked about in the Dáil. Ministers have been questioned about this.
Yes.
The HSC have commented on it. Tusla have commented on it. We have the councillors passing motions this week to ensure that these services can't be lost. So in terms of all the players and those with influence, it seems everybody is on board. So is there any update in terms of these services going forward, Liam?
Well, yeah, Greg, you know, as I said, the support that the services have received over the last, you know, 3 weeks in particular, since this all happened, has been overwhelming, you know, because I think people in the county have really got behind the services because there's very few people around the county that at this stage are not aware of them and know the value of the work that's done. So, yes, there is an update, actually. This week, the HSE and Tusla are to meet on Thursday. And, you know, I suppose the background to that is really is that the HSE has been having their own meetings internally to see how they can come on board. And now they're joining up with Tusla in the hope to come up with a joint package to be able to kind of come back to us next week, next Tuesday, hopefully this day week, and sit with us and, you know, open the conversation about how to put supports of core staff in place so that the service can continue and build over the next 20 years, really, because I think that's the bit that's important. It's about not just digging it out of a hole, but kind of having looking forward to what's needed in order to maintain it and allow it to grow. So, I mean, for us, that's excellent news at this stage. It's a completely different picture from what we had. There's a long way to go yet in terms of, well, let's see what we can do and what's put on offer to us. But we're certainly delighted that people are at this point coming to talk to us, whereas, and you know, the reason we were closing in the first place is because nobody would talk to us at that point.
Yeah, indeed, and they have been brought to the table. And in fairness, we all would have liked a quick fix, but when we're talking about a long-term solution to this, Tuzla has been burnt in the past. So HIT has to ensure what is required, that there's no skeletons, financial skeletons in the closet, nothing being not disclosed, but you know what I mean, in terms of actually, well, what kind of a financial commitment will we have to make multi-annually? So I understand that they have to go through that and seek further information, and clearly they've been satisfied that everything is grand in that regard. So we've got the HSE and the Tuzla meeting this week to engage, and then from there they are going to meet with representatives from the counselling service next Tuesday. So the direction of traffic is a very positive one, and it seems that those that need to be taken an interest in this are now. What are you able to relate at this point to your staff, for an example? Because I know you're having to temper your conversation with us. Is it the same type of messaging that you're giving to your staff?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same messaging that we're giving to our staff, because we really don't know any more than that, and we would only be speculating if we were to say any more than that at the moment, because we don't know ourselves. But for us, the positive development here is that, you know, we have two organisations coming together, Tuzla, the HSE, and then they're coming to us with the view to resolving the matter. And so, you know, I'd love to at this point be able to say to the staff, look, we're out of danger, we're secure, we're home and dry, but until we meet with both those teams, we can't say we can't say anything, really. We can't solidly stand over. But just going back to what you were saying there, Greg, in relation to Tuzla having to kind of go through everything with us, you know, that's perfectly reasonable, completely understandable, and very important that, you know, whatever they need, that we're able to supply to them, and that they're able to stand over. And I mean, Tuzla has been working with us for many years, and I think Tuzla are very aware that, you know, everything is up to date, but it's just a process that we have to go through.
Yeah, exactly. And as I say, it'd be remiss of Tuzla not to go through that. But as you say, there's an ongoing working relationship and all the ducks in a row. So that's not going to be a barrier. So whilst there has to be a little bit of caution here, there's certainly quite a good bit of room here, Liam, for positivity. And I think the meeting on Thursday and the meeting next week will have a much clearer picture. And hopefully the HSE have a more detailed response to go out to the public, because the last one is the statements. Tuzla and HSE are very officey and what you might expect, no harm to them, but we want something that's a little bit more tangible and digestible to us regular folk.
Yeah, well, look, from what I understand, Greg, is that this plan has been put in place, and that the HSE themselves will be releasing a statement later this week. Now, I don't know what they will say in that statement, but I assume it's going to be basically what I'm saying to you now. And I suppose for the HSE, like Tuzla, they have to come and sit with us to kind of go through everything as well, which is, you know, perfectly normal. We have no problem with that.
Okay, well, Liam, listen.
For us, it's about maintaining.
That's it, exactly. And building for the future.
It's about maintaining the service. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, building for the future.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Liam,
so it's good news so far.
Hopefully we'll chat again when we get the proper good news. But I just want to pay tribute to you, Liam, and how you've handled this, to get the message out there in a way that sort of got people listening, but at the same time did it in such a way where you didn't shut down lines of communication, because those were essential that were kept over. So I think you've walked a tightrope. But we'll not celebrate yet, Liam. I'll save the plaudits and what have you for when we have something more concrete. But for now, thanks so much for the update.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, Greg. Thank you.
All right, take care of yourself. Liam Cannon there, Director of Counselling at Raphoe Dyson Pastoral Centre. And by the way, I just want to say as well, the situation hasn't been resolved yet. But people speaking out, Donna, the Bishop and others, have been incredibly important to this. Your communications that we've been able to read out. The HSE listened to this programme. Tuzla listened to this show, we know, because if you say something wrong, within about 5 seconds, you're pulled up on it. all of you who got involved in that and related your stories and the importance of this service and the impact it's had on you and your families, the impact it might have on you if it was discontinued, the fact that it's unacceptable that we could be treated in such a way. As I say, it's not over the line yet, but trust me when I say, you out there as listeners who've had your say on this, be it on social media, but contacting us, whatever it might be, also, if it is achieved, if what it's hoped to be achieved is achieved, it's very important that you as well out there take your share of the praise. I don't know what the right word is. In relation to counselling, I've been through it about three times. It's most likely the person I'm here today. The government is throwing money at some ridiculous causes, and here is a vital service which needs support. We're on the brink of getting that support confirmed. Okay, so that's the one positive. But again, thank you so much for lending your voice to that. A memorial plaque for an RUC officer, which was stolen from a local graveyard, has been returned, but there is a new inscription on it. Terry Doherty is the brother of John Doherty, that RUC officer from Donegal. Thanks for joining me, Terry. I do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the show, Greg. And we've been down this road before, back in November, when spineless individuals invaded the graveyard to steal the memorial stone and a poppy wreath a week after the memorial service to honour John on the 50th anniversary of his murder by terrorists. And I state terrorists. If this is their way of showing how they behave, God luck to Ireland. They cut through the inscription on the stone, added their own propaganda, and if they think with me being on the radio today will add to their propaganda, it falls far short from my point of view, because you're nothing but spineless individuals, vandals, that would lower yourselves to carry out such an act. We have the stone, and it's on its way to the firm that supplied the memorial stone, and it will be refurbished and returned to its former glory. And we'll hold our heads high.
When I spoke to you in November, Terry, obviously you were you were upset and angry with this plaque being removed. I thought it would have been stolen, chucked somewhere, something terribly disrespectful. But for it to be returned with this new inscription, I can only begin to imagine what your emotions are, and I think you've actually really articulated them in the first couple of minutes of this conversation. But even you couldn't have imagined, could you, that this could turn up again and be defaced with this inscription as it has been?
Well, I think it's their way of trying to rub salt in the wound. And as a Catholic priest approached me yesterday to condemn it, every right-thinking person would actually condemn it as well. If they have to go to these extremes, and I won't broadcast the propaganda they had on the back of the stone after they cut through the inscriptions on the face of the stone. If this is their way of getting propaganda, it falls far short of my idea of propaganda. Again, if I could quote a famous Lord Kitchener and refer to these guys as spineless individuals, I quote Lord Kitchener, "Your country needs you," unquote. Yes, every community should have individuals, spineless individuals like this. And I can assure you, Greg, that when the stone is returned to its former glory, the evil hands of these spineless individuals will never again blemish or stain the memorial stone. That is for sure. And we have a few culprits in our minds, no names mentioned. And I would like to pay tribute to John and all his fallen colleagues, and as well members of the PSNI who have all paid the ultimate sacrifice. I recite a well-known verse in their honour. They shall not grow old as we who are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them, we will remember them. And John will always be honoured and remembered for as long as there are Doherty in existence. They will never get the better of us. They can't win. When you carry out actions like this, as I said before, any right-thinking person would totally condemn it. Okay. Nothing but spineless individuals. And I'm sure they'll not try to vandalise the stone after this.
How can you be so assured of that, John? Oh, Terry, I beg your pardon. Oh,
yeah, you're okay. No problem, Greg. No problem. I won't go any further than that
okay,
point, Greg.
No problem. Understood. Okay. Right, Terry. Listen, I'm sure you don't mind me accidentally calling you by your brother's name. You held him in such and hold him in such high regard. Okay, Terry.
No, you don't have to apologize.
No, I understand.
You don't have to apologize, Greg. You don't have to apologize.
All right, Terry.
No, just to get that.
No, you did. You did, and it came across loud and clear. And just to remind listeners, by the way, that Detective Constable John Doherty was just 31 years of age when he was shot dead by the IRA on October 28th of 1973. He was visiting his widowed mum in Ballandrate, 5 minutes from the border, as anyone in the area would know. He was gunned down at the entrance to his mother's home. His girlfriend was also seriously injured in the attack, but nobody was ever convicted of the murder. Thankfully, his girlfriend did survive, but that plaque was defaced unceremoniously. Well, I don't know what the right phraseology is. I don't want to misspeak in that regard. But anyway, obviously a great deal of upset to the Doherty family. But you heard the words of Terry Doherty there, and very strong in what he had to say. For now, the DUP has agreed a deal to restore power sharing in Northern Ireland after a two-year impasse. The party executive were told back to deal overnight, though we don't know by what number, following an agreement with the UK government on post-Brexit trading. Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald says they'll now engage with the parties and both governments to ensure they all press on without delay. Party leader Geoffrey Donaldson said the arrangement should see the Assembly restored by the February 8th deadline. Anton McCabe is, of course, an incredibly well-known journalist, much of his time covering the situation in Northern Ireland, and he joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Anton.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. Right, so last night was bizarre in that there was a great deal of secrecy as to where this meeting would even take place. And then we had a person with a different point of view to Mr. Donaldson live tweeting from it, which created quite a bit of a stir within the building itself, because everyone was looking at each other to say, well, who's telling Jamie this information? Before we get on to sort of the nuts and bolts of what was agreed, it was really quite a bizarre evening.
Oh, it was, yes. And I mean, you know, there is clearly an anti-agreement faction within the DUP. It's uncertain how big they are, but they are certainly significant and vocal. However, the logic of the situation has pushed Donaldson into an agreement. First of all, there is no alternative in that the DUP knows that direct rule is not in the interests of unionism. Direct rule means that the British government can basically do as it wishes. Very importantly and very immediately, an end to the executive and assembly means an end to salaries for the for DUP assembly and executive members, and obviously they are sensible enough to know that the current situation could not go on indefinitely. They even also know that by biding their time, like Sinn Féin is only three seats ahead of them in the Assembly, they know that basically one or two bits of bad luck for Sinn Féin, a couple of good bits of good luck for the DUP, and they could overtake them in terms of numbers in the next assembly. The numbers aren't out of sight. Also, as well, that Donaldson knew that he wasn't going to get the protocol or the Windsor House framework overturned. Those are international agreements between the British government and the European Union. The British government, particularly a Boris Johnson British government sometimes, may have made noises of sympathy for unionism, but will not break an agreement. Because we should remember that both Boris Johnson was the man who told the unionists, that the DUP rather, that there was no way there would be an Irish Sea border, and he was the man who signed up to it.
But just in relation to that, Anton, and I don't want to interrupt your flow, I think that's what this is all going to come down to, because it seems to be that Geoffrey Donaldson is saying that there will be zero checks, zero customs, zero paperwork for goods moving from Britain to Northern Ireland. And if he can prove that, all well and good. But his opponents seem to be convinced that there's going to be a watering down of that and there will be some checks. So that means that he will not have delivered the removal of this sea border, as it's been commonly referred to now. And that could be a big problem for Geoffrey Donaldson. Could it be as simple as that it comes down to him stating that there will be zero checks, zero customs paperwork, and maybe there being some?
But, I mean, even pre the protocol, there were checks on certain goods between the North and Britain. You know, particularly livestock were checked. But I think really that given the complexity of these matters, I think, yes, that he can probably get away with it. It seems as if the talk is that there would be two lanes. There would be one lane goods from Britain coming into Northern Ireland, and another lane for goods which were for transit to the EU, that is to the to the south. I think that yes, Donaldson can get away with it, and there is particularly the case if we remember that the week before last we were talking about the strikes here in the north.
Yeah,
there are major problems. The health service is facing a crisis. There are most public sector workers haven't received pay rises in a couple of years. They really have been used to blackmail the DUP. All of that means that and abstention is not a long-term tactic.
But Anton, this is being framed by, you know, opposers of Geoffrey Donaldson as the surrender deal, that they have surrendered on the red lines, the principles. You know, now as you say quite rightly, you can't abstain forever, but that's the sticky wicket Mr. Donaldson found himself in, isn't it? Because on one side, he was damned if he did, and on the other, now he's damned if he doesn't, if you know what I mean. So do you think this surrender deal terminology will catch on and threaten his leadership and maybe even the long-term establishment of the executive?
I think that the surrender slogan will catch on with a section of the probably, but mainly a section who are already alienated from the DUP. If we look at the last assembly and local elections, the TUV, Traditional Unionist Voice, did poll well. However, it did not poll near well enough to pose any threat to the DUP. The DUP have taken the decision that they can really they can challenge these people. That's their belief. That to say they're a busted flush is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
However, to say that they are a minority, and really where the, you know, for the DUP, their main vote losses are particularly towards Alliance, where you would have a section of Protestants, and maybe particularly middle-class Protestants, would be seeing, they would see this, you know, as the best deal they can get.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite simple. It's as in many negotiating situations. Certainly, you go for things, but equally, you understand that you go for the best deal you can get.
But Anton, just finally, an awful lot of conversation and talk about this deal for some. It's going to be a really effectively a smokescreen for them not really being able to tolerate an executive that is led by Sinn Féin. Is that a bitter pill that will have to be swallowed and will be swallowed going forward?
Oh, yes, it is. Because it was, there certainly was a section motivated by that. But there are many intelligent people in the DUP, and they realise that by being seen to thwart a Sinn Féin First Minister by a manoeuvre serves to increase Sinn Féin support among the nationalist community, demoralise people within unionism, whereas in many ways they feel that they can wait, they can prepare for the next election, and possibly wrest the first minister's position back from Sinn Féin.
Mm-hmm. I get you. Anton, listen, thank you so much for your analysis. We really do appreciate it. That's journalist Anton McCabe there. And if you have your views, 086 60 25,000, from the North, 00353 86 60 25,000. Caller says depopulation of people living in the countryside doesn't apply here in Ireland. In the countryside here, there will be hundreds of cars up and down the road every day. In England, you only see four cars in the countryside of farmers. Not quite sure about that. Okay. The big thing to watch on NCT is if you buy your car with no NCT and it's expired in 3 months and you go to get it sorted for the test, you only have whatever is left on the car unless they test it on the anniversary. You might not realise until you're at a checkpoint you need to watch the anniversary of the car. And that was the point I was saying about it being backdated, if I'm understanding you correctly. A caller says if you go to do your NCT online, you'll wait 6 months. If you ring up, you'll get seen quicker. It'll only be a few weeks. Well, if you call just after midnight, and I mean literally just after midnight, you can get an appointment sometimes the next day, the day after that, or the next day. But you have to be straight in after midnight. That's the key, because that's when they reset the systems. During the day, definitely you might get one in 2 or 3 weeks. But I assure you, because I've seen it with my own eye, that you can get within days if you just go straight after midnight when their system is reset there. Let me know if that works for you. Right, okay. I've been through this recently and about to go through it again. The issue in getting a driving test. You know, it's so bloody expensive to get on the road now. You have to do the theory test, which costs money. Sometimes you have to do it a couple of times. Then you have to send away for your license. That's more money. Then you have to do your 10 or 12 mandatory tests. That costs money. You can't apply for your driving test until you're 6 months with your learner permit. I understand why all these rules are in there, whether you agree, I agree with them or not. So then you wait your 6 months. So you've done your theory, got your license. You wait another 6 months. You've done your 10, 12 tests. And then you apply. You're invited then to apply for your test. And you could be waiting another 6-8 months. And if there's a delay with weather or whatever, how long? God knows how long it might take. So it takes an awful long time to get on the road and an awful lot of money. Councillor Micheál Colm McGowan-Esbeg has been commenting on this and joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Micheál. Imagine why.
Imagine why, Greg, and imagine why the Dodgy City. Hope you're all well.
Yeah, I mean, you were out on the ground in West Donegal, particularly, in fact, most of Donegal, you need a car. So I don't think it's a west, north, south or east situation. And what are you hearing from young people in relation to this issue?
Yeah, this is an issue that a lot of people come to me and have been over a period of time. And what it seems to be is that people are waiting months upon months upon months to get their driving test done. And as you says correctly, that we live in a very rural area. That whole Western Corridor and most of the country is quite rural. We depend heavily on our car due to the fact of, I suppose, the failure of any real public transport being put available through the Fianna Fáil and the Gael government. But the problem here is that a lot of young people are missing massive, massive opportunities, missing opportunities in terms of college, missing opportunities in terms of employment. And I've seen people who have been waiting such a long time and decided, you know what, it's too long a wait. I'm going to head to Australia. I'm going to head somewhere. I can get up the mines. I don't need the driving license, or to head somewhere else. And we're losing people in the country, and people who have been offered jobs, good jobs, to get them to stay at home. I see young ones who really don't want to leave, but they do want to stay at home, but they have no other choice. Mm. I've seen people who have had college, but they had no transport to get to college. Mm. They mightn't have been able to afford the accommodation, say, let's say, somewhere without naming anywhere, but so they need the car. If they're going out to Letchkennan, they need the car because they mightn't be able to afford or even find accommodation. So there's a mess there. So what I've been trying to do is, and I'm grateful to Thomas for this.
Before we get into that question, can I add something to that as well? Because I agree, and I don't think many people can disagree with you, that people leave simply because they can't wait to get a driving test. But I think it's also a feeling and a sense that they get. You know, where am I going to live? You know, what, I can't get into a car, and if I do, the insurance is through the roof. So for some people, it's actually a feeling that, well, this country isn't for me, which is, I think, adding to a lot of, and maybe sometimes we add to it by, you know, talking things down, but it's what we have to do. So I think, too, there's a lot of ones leaving because there is this feeling, and it is a reality as well for many, of course, that this is not a country for them. And that's what really kind of breaks my heart, that they go, well, I've got no prospect for a house. I can't even get a car on the road. What's there here for me? And I think that's a really bad advertisement for our country. It should be so much different.
Well, I suppose we have to be very honest and open about this, is that, you know, and without doing too much politicking, but we have to call it out for what it is. The failure of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to actually properly invest into our communities, to provide the services, to provide the jobs, job opportunities, and also the wages. And I was talking to a man the other day who was telling me we were down in Crutch Island, and a man who's worked really hard all his life, reared a family, and he says, my children can never ever live here because they can never ever afford to build here. That's just the reality. It wasn't a case that they couldn't get the land. The land is there, but just couldn't afford it. And the way that we've structured our communities and societies now is absolutely chasing our youth and middle-aged people. It's not just young ones, middle-aged people, to different countries, to foreign countries. But going back to the driving test, it's actually a big issue. And I was really listening carefully to what you were saying there in your intro, in terms of all the driving lessons and tests that are driving lessons that you have to do prior to getting it, because, you know, me and you would be similar age. And when we were younger of that age, you know, you got a number of driving lessons and off you went and hopefully passed your test. But what's happening now is that it's mandatory to have a certain amount. And I think myself and yourself spoke about this years and years ago. Why can we not do this through the school system? Mm. Why can we not do it through the school system where once you leave your school or you come to a certain age, you've already done all your lessons through the classes and it's a part of the curriculum. And then it saves time and money. A lot of families, and I can only speak for West Donegal because that's the area I represent, a lot of families just cannot afford all the lessons and tests. It's just not there. The money ain't there. People are struggling to pay rent. People are struggling to pay mortgages. And they're really, really finding it hard to actually give money to the young ones to get them lessons. Yeah. So the whole system is not working.
Like if you consider if you're on minimum wage, which many people are, particularly in the west of the county, if you're on minimum wage, one driving lesson is not... It's a big chunk of your weekly wage, and you have to do that 10 or 12 times. And that's whilst you're looking around to get a car, and that's also whilst you're looking around maybe to get a credit union loan and lump the insurance and car in, you know, the first year. That's what a lot of people do. You know, you borrow for the car and the insurance at the same time. But if you're spending a load of money on lessons, we understand the safety element of it, but there has to be a better way or even some sort of positive discrimination whereby there is some sort of a fund or a voucher system where the government gives someone, you know, €400 voucher towards driving lessons and it can be only used that way. There's loads of ways this could be, we could help the people. But just to, we'll get to the issues raised on your behalf by Deputy Thomas Pringle and the commitment coming back then from the Minister.
Well, I'm waiting for the response now on that PQ to come through on this one, because the last one that was from other, I was reading it, I think I might have sent it on to Caroline, I'm not very clear or sure, but the government then, from the Gaelic Fianna Fáil government then, talked about putting more resources into the tests and reducing the time. But for me, unless they've done it in other areas, I don't know, but surely they haven't done it for Donegal, where they have reduced the times. And if any of the government TDs or minister wants to come on and contradict me and put me right, that's, listen, absolutely take that on the chin. But the reality for me, or more so or for the young ones that come to me regularly, are that they're left for months and months and end. I was talking to a lad yesterday who's nearly a year waiting for his driving test.
Well, listen,
that's a young lad that wants to stay at home.
Yeah, for sure. And we should be facilitating him staying at home. Now, listeners, absolutely, out there is bound to be one of yous out there, or your young ones they've been invited for booking a test. Let us know how far in advance the test actually is, and that date can move. Like, you know, if there's a drop of frost, that all the blinking tests are cancelled.
It can be moved. The dates can be moved. Correct. And also the other thing is that if you fail your driving test, then you're then back into a whole process of waiting again. Mm. So it's a long, long process. And I do think that it'd be worth exploring the possibilities of making it a part of curriculum within our secondary schools. And why wouldn't we do it? Look, difficult things take a bit of time, and possible things just take that bit long, a little longer, as somebody once says. Yeah. And it's all down to the will. That's where it's at. If you look at the insurance industry...
That's far more practical than increased speed penalty points at weekends. And you know what I mean? Like that, I think that's sort of very reactionary. Obviously, the logical thing to do, and we've seen how these... road shows that they put on affect children and younger people, sorry, and they're, of course, the logical thing to do is tool people up with the proper education on road safety and driving in secondary schools. It makes absolute sense. Stay where you are, Micheál, because Seamus has a suggestion, which, I mean, I'm not sure in this day and age it will ever get over the line, Seamus, but what do you think?
Well, any young person that has applied for their driving license, Greg, they should be fit to drive unaccompanied until the driving test comes through. And if they fail the driving test, then they go back to not being allowed to drive unaccompanied. Mm. Because the way it is now, it's just a money racket.
It is, but one thing, it Seamus, is not to contradict you, if you do it that way, right, we already see this with the learner permits. You would just book a, you would have failed your test, book a new test and back out driving on your own again. Would that not lead to maybe people... Go ahead.
But how did we learn to drive?
Well, I know how I learned to drive. I used to drive back from Mass with my father, and I won't reveal the age. I was listening to Micheál talking about a few lessons and the way you
no,
went.
No, I'm not saying
that's not
that.
How we did
when
it,
I was young,
to be honest with you.
When I was young, you were fit to drive on your provisional license.
Yep, for sure, definitely.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just all gone now to about money. How much money can we get off the people?
Seamus.
Like, the young people are paying over the nose for insurance because they're on a learner permit. And through no fault of their own, they are being overloaded because they can't get a driving test.
If you're under 20, I think it's either under 20 or 21, or it could be 19, there's a 50% young driver premium. Literally just 50% put on your insurance because you're of that age. It's not based on your experience or your ability. It's just a levy, a 50% levy on young drivers. That's from the insurance companies. That's a disgrace as well. Seamus, I have to leave it there, unfortunately. Yeah. We'll come back to this, Seamus, and please text in the next time because I'd like a longer chat with you because I hate cutting people off. But we're right up against the clock. Councillor Micheál Colum, if you get an answer back to that PQ, maybe you might come back on and we can tease this out a little more when there's more time because it's affecting hundreds of people out there. And it is a factor in the depopulation, particularly, I think, of rural Ireland.
Absolutely. And I will come back and just on 2 points very, very quickly. The government does have the ability to step in when it talks when you're talking about insurance. And that 50% levy is youth discrimination. And it's all about profit. And they can and they should step in and make it affordable. Making rich people richer is very much what Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are certainly about. But going back to the thing, and I think it should be discussed in the next opportunity to get, maybe with the minister when he's on, is to discuss the possibility of looking at the schools and having the tests or the lessons there. You have simulators that we see. There's a friend of mine who is in Dublin Airport who has a simulator there. There are loads and loads of ways that we can actually do this and be very, very practical and cost savings for families that are absolutely on the breadline already, and it's not absolutely fair because our community deserves better.
And the transition is year, I think a lot of, it's funny enough, I think maybe in rural Ireland not as many take the transition year as others do because they need to get out and start working, funny enough. But anyway, there are opportunities in schools to educate on this. If it is as important as everyone says it is, and we know it is, well, then that's precisely how you do it, through education at an early age. Councillor Micheál Colum McGillan-Asbach, thank you very much. Seamus, thank you. We're joined on the programme now by Noel Cunningham, author of Guide to Modern Irish Manners and Donegal Ambassador. Good morning to you, Mr. Cunningham. Hello, Noel.
In young, can you hear me?
I can hear you now, Noel. Go ahead.
We haven't spoken in such a long time. We're long overdue a chat. How are you all and all your good listeners?
We are doing fantastic, and we're all very excited to see you appear on RT1 tonight. That's why I wanted to speak to you. It's at 7 p.m. It's a show called High Road, Low Road. You're teaming up with Mary Kennedy, and you're off to Valencia. Talk to me about the show.
Well, the show is quite a funny little unique way of doing a travel show. You pitch up at the airport at 5 o'clock in the morning. You have 2 suitcases. You don't know where you're going. When you arrive, you don't know if you've been the lucky one to get the luxury or the unfortunate one and get the budget accommodation. And it's enormous fun. And it was enormous fun. And Mary Kennedy is just glorious company. And honestly, Valencia is the most beautiful city imaginable. So great crack, great fun. And I was truthfully out of my comfort zone because I'm usually in control of everything.
I can't believe you managed to travel away on 1 suitcase, Noel. That's the biggest shock to me.
Look, to be honest, there are penalties that should be enforced for those who impose a certain type of holiday on a refined Irishman, Donegal person of the year, who happens to be gay and who happens to live in Harvey's Point. honestly, it's a crime against hospitality to take me out of that zone and impose a completely different regime. And that's all I'm saying. But the show is all the better because of it.
Yes, indeed. And what a perfect guest for this programme. Are you allowed to divulge if you're wined and dined in first class or if you're on the budget side of things? Or is that part of the reveal, Noel?
I couldn't possibly say unless I had my lawyer present. Suffice to say, everything up until we touched out in Valencia was fabulous.
Okay, that I think, you know what, if I'm reading you correctly, that's more fun because I want to see you suffer, Mr. Cunningham.
Well, you may be in for precisely the treat you've waited so long for.
Very good.
Oh, it's good crack.
Yeah, indeed. It's nice. Hopefully you have to rough it like the rest of us minions. But anyway, you're in good company anyway. That's first class. That's one thing you're guaranteed. You and Mary, I'm sure you make an adorable team.
Mary Kennedy's one of the great Irish broadcasters. She's quite legendary. She's done them all. State funerals, state weddings, the big events in history in Ireland in the last 50, 60 years. She's just an incredible lady and such delightful company. And as we say in Donegal, no airs and graces about her. One of our own delightful lady.
And your line's about to break up, I think, but I haven't seen this programme. But it might not be all it seems in that, you know, sometimes maybe you could have a better holiday, you know, with the street food and what have you, than you might, you know, in the five-star. You know, there's nothing guaranteed. The luxury doesn't necessarily make the holiday or the experience.
A most important lesson to learn, that travel is the most wonderful thing imaginable, and you are so right. That does not mean that you have to be cosseted in a five-star hotel. Now, I'm beginning to get emotional because I would have accepted such a situation had it been offered, but I got over it and my therapy's going well. And Valencia was a lovely experience. So please tune in tonight and enjoy the crack.
I can't believe you're being a little bit dramatic. I didn't think that was one of your character traits, Noel.
Who, me?
Yes.
Drama. Oh, for heaven's sake.
We look forward to
it. I thrive on it.
I know. Look, it's the High Road, Low Road. It's an RTE One tonight at 7 p.m. and it'll be available afterwards on The Player, featuring our own Noel Cunningham, he and Mary Kennedy, off to Valencia. But what kind of holiday will they have? Tune in and find out. Noel, lovely to chat to you. See you soon.
God bless. We'll have a proper chat one of these days on air. Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Take care of yourself. That's Noel Cunningham there. Thank you, Denise Roper, for bringing back such wonderful memories. May and Francis were so kind, coming in from Patricia indeed. And on it goes. Thank you so much for all of your calls, comments, and even just listening. That's good enough for us. We really do appreciate it. But that's where we have to leave it for today. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning, bright and early from 9. Stay tuned.